Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 55, being recorded on the 3rd of December, 2014, with special guest Apoorva Joshi. My name is Sujit Mello. I'm a senior consultant with Microsoft in the app dev space based out of New Jersey. And on Skype with me, I have my esteemed colleague, Evan, and our special guest. Guys, please introduce yourselves.
Yeah. Hey, folks. This is Evan Vaslik, and I'm with the Windows on Azure team in Windows support, supporting Azure IaaS and Azure networking.
Hey, guys. I'm Apoorva Joshi. I'm a PM on Azure websites team, and I work on building tools and features for the Azure websites.
Great. Then thanks. Really appreciate Apoorva taking the time to join us. He was a bit under the weather, but he was nice enough to still do the podcast with us, so we really appreciate that. Apoorva, give our listeners a little more background as to, you know, what you do and what the area that you work in, and what do you touch on in Azure?
So in Azure, I work on a specific product or a PaaS offering, as we call it, as Azure Websites. It's a fully managed Azure service that helps people host their web applications very easily and seamlessly. And my core job is to basically enable scenarios that helps people to move to Azure websites easily and quickly, right? That involves building features, building tools or engagements and things along those lines.
Great. Now, just, you know, without giving away too much of inside information, like, how's the adoption of the Azure websites been so far?
So it's probably one of our fastest growing services, Azure services all up. And we've been growing about 650% quarter over quarter.
Wow.
And we have recently reached 2 billion hits per day for
wow.
our service all up. We are deployed across multiple regions around the world, and now, you know, I would say about 60, 70 deployments around the world, right? So it's growing really fast, and yeah, we have about, you know, hundreds of million hits per day websites running with us, starting from startups, dot-coms, corporate websites, and we're starting seeing adoption from an enterprise space as well now.
And you guys, and these are, I mean, these run the gamut from not just that range of customers, but a range of scale, right? From a tiny
yep.
little website up to, you know, massive
exactly.
websites that are scaled out.
Exactly, you got it, right? So it can be personal blog or home, you know, home business, or to all the way up to dot-coms, like, you name it.
Wow. Now, I know you mentioned that we have Azure websites in different parts of the globe. As a matter of fact, I was recently helping a friend of mine, my family member in India, and we set up a Azure website for him. And I think it's based out of Singapore, right? The data center down there.
Yeah, one of the data centers the available for to India region is Singapore or the
Hong Kong.
East Asia, right?
I see. And is it the hardware that's the VMs, the PaaS VMs that are used to run the Azure website, are they the same everywhere, or do they have different depending on the data center you're in?
So they're pretty much the same everywhere. We today support the small, medium, and large size VMs, and they are exactly the same as the PaaS VMs, right? Because it's important to note the Azure website in itself is the largest cloud service out there that is built on Azure, right? So we use the cloud services, blob storage, SQL, Azure, all the core infrastructure services provided by Azure to build
mm-hmm.
this managed service all up.
So do you guys, and we use the distinction in in support, at least in my space, where we talk about there's Azure services and there's on Azure services, right? And the on Azure services are the ones that are built on top of kind of the four base components of compute, database, networking, and storage. Now, do you guys consider yourselves to be kind of, you know, you just happen to be deploying an application that leverages all these features of Azure, and you might or might not be able to do it without it, or do you guys kind of look at yourself as even a layer underneath everybody else? Like how do you guys consider yourself an Azure property at that point?
Yes, so we are on Azure compute, right? So we are on Azure property, but we are a part of, way of a compute, right? The best way to put this across is I like this analogy, is when you look at the IaaS, the infrastructure as a service, it's like building your own house, right? And then there comes the cloud services, the compute resource that we use to build the Azure websites, is using cloud services like renting the house. And when you use the Azure websites to host your web application, it's like similar to living in a luxury hotel where things are basically built for you. And you just get your code along and go with it.
Wait a minute. As an IaaS guy, I'm not sure if I like that analogy. That I'm like the low rent building, and you're the high end luxury hotel.
But then you have a flexibility of building the things the way you like it. But it's a lot of work, right? So at Azure website, we try to do things and build features that basically have a key turn scenarios, like, you know, testing in productions or traffic manager support or backup and restore or you know, what the other thing that we have called like scale and swap and things along those lines, or diagnostics support or migration assistance. All these features that you will have to normally build by yourself to build a large scale application, we just build it for you, and you can start leveraging for free as the same price that you're going to pay for the other compute.
That's really amazing. Yeah, I mean, I know I have a few websites out there on Azure website, and it's a phenomenal offering. There's no doubt about that. But let's put the hat on for a typical typical listener, a listener who's an enterprise customer maybe, and they've got an app which they've written with maybe, you know, MVC or ASP.NET or something like that. Let's start with that. I know websites can do more than just .NET, but what should they be thinking about if they want to move to Azure websites? Like what are the advantages they're going to get other than, you know, the cost advantages?
Yeah, the cost advantage and the other things that we talked about, the feature set, right? They are typically missing that you either have to build yourself, mm-hmm. or are just not there. And the best examples are like the testing and protections, or the slots, or backup and restores, right? And the diagnostics and self-service and things like that. They just come as a part of the offering itself, right? So if you're a .NET shop, there's nothing really much to think about, like, you know, whether my application is going to work on Azure websites or not, as long as it's not really complex based on a SharePoint application and things along those lines, right? So we do support .NET, we do support PHP. In fact, about 40% of our workload is actually open source PHP and Node.js, and, you know, we have a support for Java and things along those lines, right? So the only thing, like, if you're writing a vanilla application, it's really simple. But for Azure websites, the only recommendation would be is to just focus on writing a good quality code, right? And that code, as long as it can run on IIS or any other web server, just zip it up, FTP, and you're good to go, and it will run on Azure websites.
Wow.
Sorry, good.
No, I was going to say, so we've actually talked about, you hit upon something that we've talked about on this show before, which is Azure is very agnostic to what you want to develop in and what language you want to use, or whether you want to use open source or not. I don't know the current numbers, but, you know, I know that in the IaaS space, I mean, we see not necessarily the same numbers you guys see, but a huge percentage of our deployments are, you know, Linux deployments. Do you find that developing applications and developing a service for that world, as well as just the Windows world, brings, you know, what kind of challenges does that bring for you guys as a development team? I know it brings some really interesting challenges for us in support, but I got to think it has similar impact on you guys in development.
Yeah, and it's an interesting question. It's right, because the other every platform has certain things that are unique, right? And at the end of the day, these technologies are running on a Windows-based OS. So the biggest challenge is going to be is just basically getting the parity on not only in the feature set but the performance and the other expectations the customers have, right? Is usually typically the biggest challenge that we end up having, right? And apart from that, you know, website being a managed service is maintaining a different runtime versions, like you know, and keeping up with the customer demand on different and the upcoming versions of, for say, PHP or Node or whatnot is always been a challenge.
Well, that's right. So you guys can't just it's not like you can with .NET where you kind of know, hey, a new version's coming and we can kind of plan for it. I mean, it's you know, whenever a major release of PHP or whatever comes out, you may or may not have known or been ready for it.
Right, and plus you have to support the old version that your customers will be using or might be using and things along those lines, right? Or if you've taken dependency on certain open source platform and if there's issues that along the lines that is actually impacting your customer base, whether it be security issues or a functionality issue, right? We always have to be on top of that and then make sure we act on it with the highest priority possible.
So are you guys finding that you actually end up contributing back to some of those open source products or?
It's not always been the case, but there are cases where, yes, we do work with them, and I can't name the company here or things along those lines, but yeah, we do work with them very closely and contribute to make changes to have a better experience for our customers, but that's not that often. But we do work with a lot of other third-party vendors, who build the technologies based on open source and maintain a very close relations to have a seamless experience for our customer. And the biggest example for that is ClearDB, which is basically a MySQL offering, right? And it's one of our great partners, right? And we work very closely to do good things, not only from the product perspective, but also from support perspective, right? Our Azure website support portal, we now give you a way to analyze and see the status of your ClearDB databases and things like that. So,
yeah, I remember seeing that when that first launched, and I thought that was really, I mean, really, really novel to see that here not only do we have the ability to run this third-party thing, but it was actually integrated into the process.
Yep.
Right? I mean, I could either pick SQL Azure or ClearDB. It was completely left up to me.
Yep.
Which was really, I mean, for me, having been in the Microsoft world for, you know, 10 years, you know, as a Microsoft person and prior to that using it, that never used to happen.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
We just wouldn't have done that. So.
And how does it work from a cost perspective with ClearDB? I mean, do we...
So ClearDB has its own offering, right? And
right.
They do provide a free offering as well, right? And it is something the cost or cogs, something they take up on their side as well for a higher adoption.
Okay.
But for a small offer, they do provide you a good size of a database and a connection limit, about 20 megabytes of database and a 4 concurrent connections, which is typically good to start or test something out, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then they take it from there on. So they're just an individual resource provider on Azure, just like any other services, but they're just tightly integrated with all of the other services just to give a first-class or a seamless experience.
Got it. Mm-hmm. So, Apoorva, I'm just curious. So, you know, I'm sure you've probably heard about some of the blockers that customers have for moving to Azure websites and, you know, what your team may be doing to alleviate some of those blockers.
That's an excellent question, right? So the Azure websites, again, you know, it's a powerful platform to do a bunch of things, but then there are web applications that are three tiers and are really highly complex and things along those lines, right? So the team has been doing or slowly building feature set to actually enable those scenarios on the enterprise sites to start moving on to Azure websites. And the biggest thing in the win, we can say, is the support that we added for VNet, right? So previously there was no support for Azure websites into your virtual network, and that support has been added recently. With that, you can actually have your middle layer or other services running on a cloud services or IaaS or whatever and be part of the same VNet as your Azure websites. This enables a large number of scenarios that typically customers were missing, especially on the enterprise side. We have an ability to do the hybrid connections where people decide to keep certain assets like the database or Active Directory on-premise and still want to connect to the to the web part on the Azure websites, and that scenario is supported. We added support for Active Directory integration, which basically was the key scenario for all the enterprise apps, right? So we've done a bunch of feature sets to enable migration to the cloud for enterprise much easy. But besides that, we've done right now, and this is something based on the feedback we've been getting from customers in the field, was to how can I easily put together a proof of concept or test out the Azure websites, right, without involving, you know, high-priced third-party consulting and things along those lines. So we built a tool that we call as Azure Websites Migration Assistant. This tool basically allows you to do multiple things, right? So let's start step by step. The way the tool works is you can install the tool locally on your web server running IIS. So it could be a web server on-premise, or it could be a web server running, say, in Amazon EC2, or anywhere, as long as it's a Windows-based server. Run the tool on that server. It does the inventory of what kind of websites you have, what kind of databases this website are using, what the connection string is, what the properties of your website's been configured, and basically builds a report and he uploads to a backend service that we have where it does the check on what is compatible and what is not. And based on that, it sends you a result back saying, you know, hey, if you were to migrate XYZ websites to the cloud, these are the compat issues that we found, and here's how you fix them. And we allow them to either fix them or probably just try and migrate as it is and see what it's going to look like on the Azure website. So once the inventory is done, the customer has the option to log on from the tool to the Azure portal using their subscription, and then pick which region where they want to create the website and a database, etc., just like how you would do from the Azure portal. And once that's done, they basically say click next and publish, where we go ahead and create the website. And if we found a database, we go ahead and create a SQL a database for them and start publishing the content and the database and migrate everything over into the Azure websites or Azure cloud in a matter of a few minutes and few clicks. And that's a very simple way for them to test out whether this application is going to work on cloud or not. And most of the time, there is a simple two-tier applications, or the line, you know, what you call as LBI applications in enterprise or in your some other hosting provider. Mm-hmm. They just seamlessly move with a few clicks, and in 5 to 10 minutes, you are actually running an Azure website.
Wow.
And test it out. Yeah.
So that tool actually sucks down all the database data and everything?
Everything, yes. And there are two options.
It all up. Okay.
Yeah, so the tool, you can either run the tool locally on the web server, or you can install the tool on your client machine and connect to your server remotely, as long as your client machine can connect to your on-premise server or somewhere else, right? And as long as you do that, it just knows what the site is, what the content is, what the site configuration is, where the database is, and then create the exact replica into the cloud, Azure cloud, and migrate stuff over.
So as you know, when you and I ran into each other before, I was, you know, working in the database space as an ex database guy and an ex SQL Azure guy. You know, they're, for better or for worse, they're not feature parity between the two. Do you guys go through with this migration and use like the what is it, the DAC? To go through it so that it can identify, hey, you can't do XYZ through that, so you can look for that stuff.
That's exactly right. We use the DAC-FX framework. Yeah, we make the check what's compatible, what's not, and we outline all of those things in the form of an exception or an error, whatever it is, right, to tell them here's why you can't migrate and here are the things that you need to fix and things along those lines, yes.
Okay, because that's a big tripping point for people, right? My code moves, but my database doesn't, right?
Right. So now you can, right? I would not imagine somebody moving terabytes and terabytes of database using this tool. But, yeah, you know, your LBI applications, yeah. It's
you know they'll try it, though.
it might work, right?
So just for our listeners, what is DAC? Can somebody explain that?
I'm trying to remember what it stands for.
It's a database access layer for basically a provider for a web deploy that we ended up writing.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, that helps you. So what this migration tool is basically is built on these technologies that are well proven and, you know, known to be working on-prem, right? So web deploy and a DACFX, the framework for database, we know it's been working for years and years. You know, people in enterprise have been using it every now and then. We just basically packaged this whole thing together into one nice experience, right? Mm. And made it very simple for customers to move to the Azure, right? So, you know, real quick, the way you get to the tool and to test all these things that out that I said is by simply going to movemetothecloud.net, right? And yeah, that's easy. Right? You just go to that website, you know, you can download the tool from there and look at how it works and things along those lines. So,
yeah, so I did a quick search, by the way, that as counterintuitive as it is, DAC stands for data tier application. So I'm not really sure how we got one from the other, but I knew I'd remembered that, so I went and pulled that up. So, but we'll put those links in our show notes because yes. Yeah, that's a great place for people to start.
Right, and it's a fantastic tool. You know, we have some telemetry to see. You know, the usage has been outstanding. People been, you know, we've been very successful with migrating. And at the end of a tool, you know, you do have an opportunity to provide the feedback, whether good or not. And if it fails, the list of an exception or whatnot, it just basically sends an email right to the engineering team, and one of us will get back to you.
Wow.
Asking or helping you out on what's wrong, whatnot. And to make sure the scale, we meet the scale requirement, you know, we're partnering with the field, the Microsoft field, and a bunch of other external partners who will be helping out with this initiative, where they will be working with the customers and using this tool to help them migrate and then field the support questions or consulting questions from that point on.
Wow. So just one thing I wanted to clarify, Purva, is you said if the tool that finds any incompatibilities in your application, it notes them in the report, right?
Yep.
And then the developer is expected to go and fix those compatibilities based on the recommendations given?
Yes, either you can fix this compatibility or sometimes you just ignore it. For example, in an on-prem IIS world, you might be running 10 websites and you were forced to change the ports of this website because you're running on the same VM, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can't use the same port. But that's a compatibility that you can ignore for Azure websites because we don't really care what the port number is when you move to the Azure website. So you can just safely ignore that and just move everything over. And things along those lines, right? The other thing is going to detect, hey, this website requires Windows authentication, and we give you an option to select, say, AAD authentication. So before you migrate the website, just select the checkbox that says, you know, turn on AAD authentication. What it's going to do is going to create the website, create the container in a default Azure Active Directory for that site, and lock the site from public access, right? The only person who can now browse to that site is the guy who actually migrated the website. Now then you can take your time to sync the XYZ number of users or whoever that you require to have access to that site offline instead of, you know, moving your Windows authenticated website from on-prem to Azure and make it anonymous, right? So,
right.
And go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I assume that you can tie that into an existing AAD as well. Because I'm sure somebody's going to ask that.
Right. If you have an existing AAD, I know it's something that we have in works is to allow you to choose from the drop-down with an existing AAD that you want to tie it to or whatnot. It will probably come out in a couple of weeks. But, yeah, that's on plan. But
okay, so it's coming. Great.
Yes, and there are things that will not work in migration, which is, like, you know, really, really old things. Because one of the things that we wanted to do with this tool was to address the end of life cycle for 2003 servers, right? But majority of the 2003 servers, you will see that there are things like COM components or you know, GAT assemblies, and you know, those are the
I forgot about all of those things.
Or iZappy filters, right? So one of the things you need we try to give you prescriptive guidance, say in case of iZappy filter, like, hey, it's not going to work as it is, you will have to write this transform and then move the modules to XYZ. COM outright, it's not going to work, right? Because we don't let you register component on Azure websites or things along those lines. So there are some gotchas, right? You can't go back 10, 14 years and then try and move everything as it is to the Azure website without and expect it to just work. But yes, there's a way and a workaround to it where you will have to do some work to have the app work end to end.
Okay. And for now, this only works, you said, on the IIS or .NET or base apps, right? Or ASP apps. It doesn't work for PHP and whatnot right now.
Well, it would work for PHP as long as it was running on Windows.
Right.
So right now, there's Windows-only support.
Okay.
Next week, we will release a version that has a Linux base support. So that tool will be safe place. You can download, run on a Linux machine, and it would basically migrate stuff from Linux, Apache to Azure websites and Tomcat or MySQL or whatever that you select.
Do you realize, Apurva, that in the last, I don't know, maybe five sentences, you said things are going to ship in the next weeks. And that's the thing that amazes me about when I'm in this cloud space, right? We talk in terms of, oh, yeah, we're going to get to that in 2 weeks. You know, we used to say that, like, you know, vNext is when we'll get to it, and that's 2 years out. Now we really do talk weeks, and we ship things.
And right.
I just want to make sure in 2 weeks is going to be around the holidays. You're sure you're going to get to this, right?
Yeah, we will.
Okay.
We're actually testing this out already with a few of the internal partners, because this was another feedback we got from the field when we released the tool, saying, hey, my enterprise customer has XYZ machines that are still Linux-based, and they can benefit from this. And we said, you know, we can do this.
So they're really empowering the customer to do a lot of these migrations themselves.
Right.
And if they feel at the end of the day that there is quite a few changes that are required, you know, based on the report, and they can connect with some people at Microsoft who can provide some services to help them do that.
Right. So the whole idea is, you know, they're well educated in the migration process. They're just not running blind, and they get all the help needed possible, right? Again, you know, make no mistake, this is not going to be the magic tool that does everything lift and shift. Any migration will require some sort of work here and there. But there is quite a bit of scenarios, right, of LBI applications. They're just really simple applications, and you know, they're 100% migrations using this tool. The others, you get one step in, and that is the hardest part is done, right? Now there's just fixing a few things to make the whole story work end-to-end, that is a huge win.
Absolutely. That's great.
Yeah, just knowing before you start the migration and not after you've already started it is a huge step forward.
Yep.
Right. I mean, that saves it, because I mean, we've all been there where, you know, that somebody thought it would work and they moved it and heaven forbid they deleted the old server before they did it. And now it's this disaster. Right?
Yep.
Here you're giving them, it looks like, I was just taking a peek at it, it looks like a nicely worked out report where they can just kind of go through and address the things. And it looks like they could even rerun it as they fix things.
Yep. Yep, that's correct.
That's what I was going to ask you. Once they fix those discrepancies or whatever, then they can rerun the report and get a good, clean report, and then they can go ahead with the migration.
That's correct, right? Yep.
Excellent. Well, that's great, Apurva. Thank you so much. I'm sure our listeners will appreciate that insight into this tool and into the Azure websites that you provided them. Evan, is there anything else that we have for Apurva today?
No, it's great. It's great to hear from you again, and glad to see that. I'd heard websites was doing great from my colleagues that are supporting, and it's amazing to hear some of the numbers you quote. That's just fantastic. So, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, Apurva, appreciate it again. And
all right, guys.
Evan, we'll see you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.